Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There was a time when schools and newsrooms warned against using Wikipedia as a research tool. Now, a New York Times technology columnist says that Wikipedia is vitally important to our culture. It is the fifth busiest website on the internet, playing host along with its sister sites to some 400 million visitors per month. And Wikipedia co-founder Jimmy Wales, named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People a few years ago, joins us today to talk about Wikipedia, what's ahead, and to answer your questions. Welcome to the show, Jimmy.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me on.
You know, every time I listen, read that number, 400 million visitors per month, I double-check it. But I was wondering a little bit about what you imagined at the outset as far as the numbers. I think that the web, you know, it seems limitless at this point.
Yeah, well, I was always very optimistic from the beginning about the possibilities for Wikipedia. I remember looking at a list of the top 100 websites and seeing at around number 50 an encyclopedia reference style site. And I thought, oh, well, if we do a really good job, we might make it into the top 100 or top 50. And now today, of course, we're the fifth most popular website. 400 million people is a difficult thing to imagine, but when I'm traveling all around the world, you know, I meet people in all kinds of places who are using Wikipedia every day. It's really, you know, we do live in a global world today.
You know, the big news of late has been the confusion some share between Wikipedia and WikiLeaks. I suppose we could just clear that up right off the bat. You don't have anything to do with them.
Nothing to do with them at all. So, you know, we just are trying to make sure people know that. The word wiki is a generic word. It basically means a website anyone can edit. And it's unfortunate that there's name confusion, but all we can do, I guess, is just let people know.
Are you troubled at all? Because with WikiLeaks, you really can't do that anymore.
Can't do what anymore?
You can't really. It's not open to anybody editing it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's not really a wiki. I mean, it's really, you know, a place where people send in documents and they publish them. It's not a collaborative editing project, which is what Wiki typically is. So, well, you know, nothing much to be done about it.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Jimmy Wales, co-founder of Wikipedia. I'm asking our listeners, have you ever considered contributing to Wikipedia? Give us a call and let us know, 614-292-8513. And, of course, we welcome your questions and comments for Jimmy Wales. Last June, the New York Times wrote about the collaboration between Wikipedia and the British Museum, and it referred to it as unusual. And I was wondering, how does that collaboration work, and do you envision others, or have there already been many more? I don't know.
Well, there have been a lot of little efforts. That was the one that, you know, was a bigger effort and got a lot more attention. But what we're seeing is this idea that different kinds of institutions, museums in particular, they have collections, they have a responsibility to educate and communicate with the public. And they're more and more understanding that, hey, actually Wikipedia is a place where we need to make sure that there's good high-quality information about our collection. How can our staff help, you know, give information and so forth. So it's been really wonderful. And we just, I was just over there at the British Museum a couple of weeks ago, and we had a little mini conference, one-day thing, and we're very warmly received by the library, and they had us as their guests and all of the local Wikipedia volunteers. So it's really nice. It's been a really nice arrangement.
How does it work? How does it look on Wikipedia?
Well, it's just it's a part of Wikipedia. I mean, it's not something that you would necessarily notice as a separate section or anything like that. It's really about making sure that the people in the museum understand how Wikipedia works, that they make available photographs of things that are in the museum that would enhance the entries about objects in the museum, that sort of thing.
In that same article, there was a reference. I think it was the New York Times article referred to Wikipedia's growing stability and then parenthetically added, some would say stagnation. And there have been other references to that effect in other articles. What do you make of that? Can you explain what they're talking about?
Well, I mean, I think what people are looking at is we've grown to such a point that we're no longer experiencing you know, I remember in the early days, our traffic doubled every 3 to 4 months. Obviously, we can't do that anymore when you've already got, you know, 400 million people a month on the website. And so now we tend to grow in the developed world. We tend to grow, you know, similar pace to the rest of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
In parts of the developing world, though, we're still experiencing really fast growth, and we still have a long way to go in terms of, you know, we're a completely global project. We're trying to provide a free encyclopedia to everyone on the planet in their own language, and so we're increasingly turning our focus to the developing world. We're opening our first office in India within the next few months, and the idea here is that those are the languages where there's a huge potential for growth, and there's a lot of growth going on, simply because people are just coming online for the first time there. People are just beginning to build out the web in their own languages, and as opposed to what it used to be in India, for example, is that all the elite who would be on the internet were all speaking English as well as their mother tongue. Now more and more people are coming online in India who don't speak English and are, you know, beginning to be more and more active in their own languages, and that's a real opportunity for growth for us. So obviously at some point, you know, with 3 million entries in the English Wikipedia, we don't, you know, double the number of entries as quickly as we would have when we went from 30,000 to 60,000, but I wouldn't say stagnation. It's too noisy a place to stagnate.
When you talk about your expansion efforts, it made me think of another story I read about a map that was produced. And I don't know how accurate it was, but it was by a research fellow at the Oxford Internet Institute showing what he called significant geographic gaps in an encyclopedia that, again, it was described as having reached its limits. But is the hope that as you expand the language base that you can expand that geographic issue, or you can address the geographic gaps such as they are?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm to go into that in a little bit more detail.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting when you look at so one way, I'm not sure of which map you're referring to exactly, but in Wikipedia, very often the community will geotag different objects or places. So, you know, if you go to the article on the Eiffel Tower, it'll give you the geographic coordinates, like the GPS coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
And when you map those all around the world and say, well, how many objects or how densely are things described in Wikipedia, what you'll see is pretty much what you would expect, that you see the U.S. has a huge number of things written about and tagged, Europe, a very, very large number. I'm talking the English Wikipedia in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to Africa, the number of geotagged places is much, much smaller. And the amount of information, in fact, is much, much smaller. The reason for that is fairly obvious. If you, I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama, a town of about 250,000 people. I'm sure it has a fabulously long, detailed Wikipedia entry because lots of people can easily research that and write about it. If you find a town of 250,000 people in Africa somewhere, we may have a very short entry because who's the mayor? What's the history of it? We just don't know that much about it. There's not that much online about it. It's harder to research. So one of the things I hope for English Wikipedia, which tends to be the melting pot language, is that as we get more people coming online from different places all around the world, they will tend to write about things in their own area. I just saw a very interesting discussion taking place about the name of the river Ganges in India, which in India, even in English, is referred to as the river Ganja, not Ganges, whereas in the U.S. and U.K., we say Ganges. And so there was a big debate about, oh, well, what should Wikipedia call it? Given that the local name in the local version of English is Ganja, and in, all around the world is Ganges. I don't have the answer to that. That's a complicated question, and they're still looking into all the details and sort of thinking about it. But that's the kind of thing where we would say, gee, there's lots of stuff in India, really interesting things, lots of very interesting history that people outside of India don't know about. We know about the most famous and big things, but what about the very, very detailed little local festivals and things like that? So I'm optimistic and hopeful that as we get more and more people online around the world and more people who can translate from one version to the other, that it will facilitate, you know, a general sharing of knowledge amongst people all around the world.
How many contributors do you have now? And do you consider people who actually start, you know, start a new entry as a contributor, or do they have a different tag?
No, I mean, we basically what we do is we think about editors. You know, everybody's an editor, basically, who comes and makes any kind of a change to Wikipedia. And in terms of how many editors there are, it's really hard to measure. I mean, if you just come and make one edit and never come back, that doesn't mean you're really a part of the community.
Okay.
If you make 100 edits a day, obviously you're a big part of the community. But we would normally say there's about 100,000 active contributors. And it just depends on where you draw the cutoff line. It's hard to say, but 100,000, I think, gives a pretty good perspective on the number of people who are actively involved in Wikipedia and would, you know, consider themselves a Wikipedia editor.
Consider themselves a what?
A Wikipedia editor.
Right, a Wikipedia editor. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Jimmy Wales. He's co-founder of Wikipedia. You can also reach us on Facebook. We have a couple Facebook comments now from Liz. I'm a grad student in biology, and I use it all the time to get definitions. It's my online dictionary plus a jumping-off point for ideas. I love Wikipedia. From Steve on Facebook, I often start with Wikipedia and encourage my students to do so, but I caution my students never to use it as a primary source for research since many of the articles are not well documented. The Wikipedia articles that are well documented have links to good primary sources that can be used for research. Is that kind of was the ideal that you were imagining, Jimmy?
Yeah, I mean, I actually really liked that second comment in particular. I'm always telling people Wikipedia is a great starting point. It shouldn't be your ending point, particularly for academic papers and research. And when we're doing our job well, you should be able to follow the link and get to, you know, even more information. And if we're doing our job poorly, meaning we haven't referenced things, then you probably shouldn't trust us on that article anyway. So for me, that's a really nice and balanced answer. I think, you know, the important thing to understand about Wikipedia and, in fact, all encyclopedias, the role of the encyclopedia in the research process is to help you get oriented, give you the broad basic background, get you up to speed so that you can really then have a base to go further. So that's absolutely right.
We're going to have to take a short break. Again, my guest is Jimmy Wales, co-founder of Wikipedia. If you have a question or comment, we welcome them. If you've ever contributed to Wikipedia, give us a call and tell us what it was like. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Go behind the scenes at WOSU with our e-newsletters. Find out what our classical music hosts are listening to. Get the latest news from NPR and the WOSU newsroom. Learn about volunteer opportunities and more. Visit WOSU.org/email and sign up for one of our e-newsletters. And remember, you can hear more from our station anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archive shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/allsides. It's 21 degrees in downtown Columbus. Scattered snow showers today, a high of 25 degrees. Some light snow tonight, cloudy skies and a low of 19. A little more snow for Tuesday, cloudy skies and another cold one with a high of 23. Looking ahead to Wednesday, mostly cloudy and a high of 25. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guest is Jimmy Wales, co-founder of Wikipedia. Jimmy is going to be speaking at Denison University this week. You can learn more about that. Go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides for all the details. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call and speak with Jimmy Wales. You can also go to our email at allsides@wosu.org. And you have discovered our Facebook presence out there, Liz. And Steve, others among you may want to go that route as well. It's All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Last summer, it was reported that Wikipedia Foundation had planned an expansion. You were basically doubling your staff and adding offices. You mentioned you're getting ready to open one, or it has just recently opened in India, another one in Brazil. When it said you were doubling it, you were adding 44 people. Where are you at right now?
Well, we're just in the beginning process. So, for example, for the India office, we've had some staff popping over there to scout out locations and to talk to different people. We've got, you know, by email, we're in discussions with various local institutions and local people who've offered to help, internet locals and things like that. And I think that the decision about which city to locate in should be made in the next month or two. I'm not directly involved, so I don't actually know what the leading candidate is.
Mm-hmm.
But then we should be starting some staffing there within, I think, 4 or 5 months from now, although I'm not sure of the exact timeline. And then in the office, it's a steady process of hiring people. I don't know the exact employee count now. I think it's probably 45, something like that. And, you know, it's partly about getting really good quality people. I mean, one of the things that you have to be careful about when you're doubling in size for an organization in a year, you've got to be really careful about the corporate culture and making sure people understand all of the ideas behind what we're doing and why we do things in our particularly curious ways. And so that takes some time.
You're the chairman of the foundation, right? Chairman of the board?
I'm chair emeritus, actually.
Okay.
Whatever that
what
means.
Do you do now? I mean, well, besides talk to people like me, is it pretty much that media presence that you represent? And then, of course, you take all the flack for your fundraising, online fundraising drive, too.
Yeah, basically. I'm the public whipping boy. So, what I do, I'm on the board. And so, I work as a board member. I work in the community, particularly with the English Wikipedia community, in sort of editorial policy and things like that. I'm always working as well with communities all around the world who come to me with various problems and, just as somebody who's seen it all by now in the mm-hmm. wiki world and tell them, you know, I can convey experiences. If they have a big fight in the Farsi Wikipedia, I can say, oh, this reminds me of what happened 2 years ago in the Hungarian Wikipedia, and I can tell you what they did that helped solve the problem. I travel a lot. I travel a lot doing media appearances and speeches and trying to tell people about the mission and what we're all about. I mean, it's interesting. A lot of people don't realize that we're a charity, except for usually at this time of year they suddenly realize it because there's my mug all over the site mm-hmm. asking people to donate. But that is an interesting thing. I meet people and they say, how do you guys get money again? Because I don't really notice that I've ever known that, you know. So that's a big part of my job.
Well, we feel a great communion with all of you here at Public Media, mm-hmm. where we do. It's been interesting to watch the flack just going on Twitter today and seeing all the griping going on about your picture being about.
Well, this is the first year we put my picture all over the site. And, in fact, the staff came to me and said they wanted to do it. And I said, mm-hmm. Really? I mean, come on. But then what they did is this year for the first time we did a lot of banner testing, A/B testing before the campaign officially launched, and they found that the banner with my picture performed at least twice as well as the next
right.
contender. And I said, well, okay. I mean, I can't really say no then. But fortunately, it hasn't really. I was worried that people would start recognizing me on the street.
Well, it kind of cracks me up because of the complaining, and it does work. I mean, I've read other articles that shows that it's bringing home the bacon, but it's sort of like those robocalls. Well, they work, or they wouldn't be doing them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my dream is that over the years, we build up an established contributor base. Someday we will begin thinking about building up an endowment. Right now, what we've been doing. We're too young and we're not really ready to build an endowment per se, but we're extending as much as we can every year our cash cushion so that we're not, you know, we want to have ultimately, you know, 1, 2, 3 years reserves. We want to run the thing in a very financially conservative and cautious way so that we don't ever run into any crises or anything like that. My dream is, of course, that ultimately we would find a way to keep the annual fund drive to a very minimum, reminder. But for now, it's what we do. So.
Yeah, as far as, you know, stashing money away for the future, there's been actually criticism of that you're not spending down every year.
Yeah, I mean, criticism like that I have a very hard time understanding, and I think we have to understand there are people out there who are just looking to see what anybody does so they can criticize it, and that's just true in general in the public sphere. My view is that we should always be very cautious. You know, if we see an opportunity, I mean, one big problem that a lot of nonprofits have and a lot of government agencies have is that there's a perverse set of incentives that you can accidentally fall into, which is the feeling that, gee, we better spend, it looks like we're not spending all our money. Let's ramp up spending quickly so that we can be prepared for the fundraiser so we'll be broke so we can ask for more. That's mm-hmm. crazy. That's nonsense talk. Instead, if we see a way, you know, a couple years ago we saw a way to save a lot of money on our hosting costs. We pursued that, and at the end of the year we ended up not spending our entire technology budget for the year, and I was super happy about that. And then somebody sort of slammed us, or like, look, they're not even spending the money on the technology. It's like, yeah, because we are smart. You know, we don't just spend it to spend it. So we try to be super conservative, and we want to build up cushion over time. Because I feel a real sense of responsibility to the public. We are a charity. We're here as a part of the infrastructure to provide information to everybody. We don't want to spend it on fat salaries. We don't want to spend it on things just because we've got the money in the bank. Instead, we want to think about longevity, think about security, make sure Wikipedia is safe.
Do you continue to get pressure from some corners to go commercial?
Sometimes. I mean, you can even see it, you know, on Twitter. Some people say, why don't we just put ads on? Mm-hmm. And then people do send emails saying, that, you know, the same thing. It's just something that we don't want to do. We prefer to remain ad-free. There's a lot of reasons for that, having to do with how we're perceived by the public, what does our community who write Wikipedia, how do they feel about it, and we don't think it's really necessary. You know, the annual giving campaign is annoying, yes, but I think that it keeps us true to the public in a way that I think advertising probably would not. You know, one of the things that's interesting about our fundraising campaign is that you know, it's hundreds of thousands of people giving small donations mm-hmm. that really is the core. And I think that's really nice. It means that we're not too dependent on large donors, although we do appreciate them. If anybody out there is thinking of making a large gift, that's very appreciated. But at the same time, we don't want to be, you know, subject to, we couldn't survive without the annual grant from a certain foundation or a certain wealthy individual. Then you end up dependent. You end up in an unhealthy situation. Whereas now we say, okay, look, we can survive on the public donations, the small donations, and then we go out to the larger donors and say, well, look, there's some projects we'd like to do beyond just surviving. We would love some help with that. And I think that's a great position to be in, because if anybody comes to us as a large donor and says, well, we want to donate $2 million, but you have to do X, Y, and Z, mm-hmm. we can just say, you know, sorry, really, we don't. Just not us.
I have an email from Tom. He writes, of course I donated to Wikipedia. If one uses it, one should donate to it. One of the pillars of Wikipedia's integrity is the lack of advertising. Like public radio, not bending to corporate financial pressures is to be admired. Thanks for what you do. Email from Hal. Please describe the Wikipedia editing process, which sounds to me like the heart of your nonprofit credible work. I have never done it. How does it work?
So that's a really great question, and I guess I could go on for hours to get into the details, but from a basic perspective, it's really very simple. For virtually every page on Wikipedia, there's an edit link at the top of the page. You can click on edit, and you'll see the raw text of the page, and when you see that, you can change anything and hit save, and your change goes live immediately. And so that's really the core of it. Now, at a deeper level, at a social level, there's a lot more going on. The community, if you go to the front page of the site and you click on community portal over on the left-hand side, you'll be taken to a whole bunch of pages all written by the community about different projects people are working on, different help pages, you know, different kinds of things going on. And a big part of the way the social structure of things work, I just clicked on this community portal link and I see – you know, being promoted there today is the Wiki Project East Asia. And so this would be a group of people who've gotten together to say, hey, we know something about East Asia, but we feel like certain articles aren't good enough yet. Let's go through and assess them and figure out what needs doing and set up some to-do lists and projects and work together on that. And there's a whole bunch of different wiki projects like that, and there's a whole list of them. So whatever people might be interested in, they can find people who have a similar interest and dig in deeper to, you know, do more in that area that you either know about or sometimes that you just want to learn about. If you're a decent writer and you say, well, I don't really know anything about Burundi. That's one I just randomly got to. And turns out there's a wiki project Burundi, and you might say, I want to learn all about Burundi, and I don't know anything. So you could go and join this project and say, hey, I'm going to take a trip to Burundi next year, and I don't really know much about it. I want to help out. I'm going to start editing articles. Where should I start? What can I help with? And so and people say, oh, great, you know, come do this, come do that. So.
There was a discussion, the founder of the website called Book Two, James, I think it's pronounced Bridal, wrote that the discussion behind the scenes, the discussions behind the posts, is probably in some ways the greater value of Wikipedia, that every change is documented and archived and often discussed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really fascinating thing. If you go to take a look at the discussion page, and sometimes archives of discussion pages, because some of them have quite a bit of text, to say what all is in there, how did it get to be where it is. I believe that this is the fellow who did the, as an art project, he did the Iraq War book series.
Right, yes.
And what he did was really fascinating. He took our article entitled The Iraq War and created 12-volume series of books where he printed out all of the changes to that one article, so every update, every change, so that you could go through it and see over time, how did that article change as new information came out? What are some of the debates that happened? It's very often quite interesting. And some of those debates are a disaster. Let me just say up front before I brag on everybody. We're human beings, and sometimes things get ugly, and nobody likes it. But typically, the typical Wikipedia debate is a really wonderful thing to see, because what you'll see is people who come down on different sides of an issue who've come together with the understanding that Wikipedia should be neutral and that we need to work together to find a way to say things that's broadly acceptable to people, even who disagree on some fundamental facts. And how do we do that? How do we get there in a way that when we're presenting information to the public, they're not getting one side or the other of the story. They're getting the tools they need to make a decision for themselves. And when that's working well, it's a fascinating thing to see. Of course, when it's working poorly, it's just like any other debate on the internet. It can be, you know, stupid. But typically, it works quite well. And sometimes the most fascinating reading on Wikipedia is the discussion page.
How much time do you spend just perusing?
Oh, probably too much. You mean like when I should be working?
Yeah, well, I just, yeah, just jumping in and checking it out.
Yeah, I mean, I use Wikipedia, I guess, just like everybody does. I end up reading it whatever I'm interested in, or what, you know, I'm online and I hear about something and I go and read about it in Wikipedia. In terms of my editing, I'm involved in policy discussions, but I also do on my own some content editing, and mostly what I edit has to do with the UK peerage, the members of the House of Lords in the UK. And I can't really explain to you why I have that interest, but I do. I've had it for several years. And it's just a hobby interest of mine. And so it's a fairly uncontroversial area, although obviously there's controversy about almost anything. So, you know, sort of the history of the UK nobility is what I do for fun.
We have another email from Robin. She writes, Mr. Wales, as a celebrity now yourself, who were you most excited to meet? So I guess you're meeting a lot of big shots now, right?
Oh, well, I don't think I'm a celebrity myself, but who excited to meet? There's a lot of people I've been excited to meet. I guess to reveal my true geeky roots, I have to confess, I recently got the chance to meet Weird Al Yankovic, and I was just out of my mind to meet him, and it was really wonderful and very nice. But, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of really amazing people. And I'm always amazed, you know, just to grasp somehow that Wikipedia's had an impact on people's lives. I'll just give a couple of examples. Mm-hmm. One, a very famous person, Jimmy Carter, met Jimmy Carter a few years back, and he immediately, he knew all about Wikipedia. He said he reads it every day, He had lots of questions about how does it work, and you know, the usual questions anybody would have about Wikipedia, and you know, told me how he uses it and the things he, you know, and he, like anybody, you know, I think he goes there to read what he's interested in and ends up clicking on links and ends up fascinated by some point of history he had not thought about before. And then the other fun example is I was in the Sangam Vihar, which is a slum area. It's a squatter area in Delhi, and so in India, very poor area, and met a young man on the street there. So they've just had electricity in this area, legal electricity, for about 2 or 3 years, and they have internet at various places. This guy was from a bit of a well-to-do family in the slums. His father owned a motorcycle shop across the street, and anyway, met him, and he said, oh, yeah, we have dial-up connection, and he uses Wikipedia. I mean, he was out of his mind that he was meeting me, you know, in the street. He couldn't believe this. So,
did he recognize your face?
No, he didn't. We were filming a documentary, and we had gone. His father also owned the private school that was there.
Okay.
So we'd gone to film at the private school, so he had heard that we were going to be there. So he came out, and we ran into him in the street outside. And then so the fun thing was he said he used Wikipedia to pass his 11th grade exam, and he also used it to find pickup lines for girls. I laughed. His father kind of glowered at him. He said, no, only for good purposes. You know, it was funny. And I was like, what does that mean exactly? We don't have pickup lines for girls. I went and looked. We have an article about the idea of a pickup line. What is a pickup line? And it doesn't list pickup lines, at least not normally. But, you know, it sort of explains the idea of a pickup line. Something cute or funny you say when you meet a girl to see if she would be interested. And, but there were outside links to list of pickup lines, and I think that's what he was referring to. I just thought that was funny and very sweet, you know, to say, you know, I'm standing in this mud street and, you know, very classic India scene, cows wandering about and so on, and to see this kid so excited about that he used it for his exams and it's sort of a window on the world for him. So, those, you know, I love the opportunity to meet all kinds of different people from all walks of life who are into Wikipedia.
We're going to take another break right now. My guest is Jimmy Wales. He is the co-founder of Wikipedia. You can reach us on email. You can at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to the Facebook, of course, Ann Fisher, WOSU, if you want to Twitter. And you can call us, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Twenty-four-year-old writer, director, and actor Lena Dunham won the South by Southwest Jury Prize with her first film, Tiny Furniture. She co-stars with her mother and sister, playing people like themselves, but less flattering. How much is the script based on them?
I've started to notice that I answer the question different ways depending on how I'm feeling about my mom and sister on the day that I answer it.
Lena Dunham on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon, right here on WOSU. Spend some time getting caught up on what's happening in your world every Friday night on WOSU TV. Starting at 8 is Washington Week. For local news, watch Columbus on the Record at 8:30. And then continuing at 9, it's the McLaughlin Group, and at 9:30, PBS presents Need to Know. Spend your Friday nights with WOSU TV, every Friday night, beginning at 8.
Support for WOSU comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television, and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to discover WOSU public media.
Connect with WOSU through one of our e-newsletters. Visit WOSU.org/email and sign up to receive emails about our news programming, special events, classical music, and more. Connect with WOSU at WOSU.org/email. 21 degrees in downtown Columbus. Clouds today, a little bit of snow and a high of 25. Cloudy tonight and a low of 19. All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides. My guest is Jimmy Wales, co-founder of Wikipedia. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. How do you decide, Jimmy, what gets to be on a Wikipedia page? Can anyone just start a page, or is there someone out there vetting these topics?
Well, in terms of starting a page, you know, for the first time, you can propose a page or you can create a page, but only if you've been a member of the community for a little bit of time. It's a very low threshold to do that. But the real process comes after that when we have a discussion about notability. There's a whole process to decide what to delete, what to keep. And I would say that the core principle that really overrules everything else, it seems, you know, that this is really what we settle on as the main most important thing, is the question of verifiability. That's not the only thing, but it's the main thing. The real question is there enough information that other people can verify to make it justifiable to have an entry about this person or place or thing? So this is a great way to deal with questions about, you know, suppose some, you know, a blogger. Should you have an article about a particular blogger or not? Well, some of them are quite famous, and there's been lots of third-party, high-quality news coverage about them, such that you can get the basic details of their life to make a decent biography. Mm-hmm. Others, someone just started a blog. They could write anything on the blog themselves. You have no way of verifying who this person really is or if anything they say on the blog about themselves is biographical, is in any way true, and so forth. And the community would look at that and say, oh, well, this is not really verifiable. We don't really have verifiable information. And then there's a whole set of notability guidelines for all different kinds of topics, all different kinds of fields. There's some rules of thumb that emerge over time as to, you know, if you say, for example, if you've won an Academy Award as an actor, then clearly you're notable. We don't even have the debate. I mean, they would just say, no, look, you won an Academy Award. You're obviously, we need an entry. What if you've appeared on, you know, one episode of a TV show? Probably not, you know. So it's a discussion, and there's a whole process behind that.
Do you ever go back and remove articles that seemed like a good idea at the time, but on second thought, no?
Yes. that happens all the time. There were some of the kinds of things that happen would be an entry that, you know, someone is in the news briefly, and an article will get written and appear to be quite useful and long. But then a few months later, you sort of realize this is what we call a biography of a person notable for only one event. And you really realize, you know, this isn't a biography of a person. It's actually about the event.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we should have an article about the event. Possibly, often it should be merged with a more general event or something like that. So it's an ongoing thing that happens as we look at things and assess new evidence as it comes in. Sometimes an article gets started and doesn't get much attention. It's not something super famous, and it may linger around for a few months until finally we begin to realize, like, you know, actually, no one's ever going to make this into anything. It's just a stub. It's always going to be a stub. There's no information available. And so we would, you know, then end up deleting it. Just by the way, on your Facebook at All Sides at the OSU, I'm posting links as I mentioned them. So
oh, excellent. Thank you.
And I can help you promote your Facebook page. How's
thank
that?
You very much. Thank you very much.
Well, I just thought it might be interesting.
Yeah, so go to Facebook, All Sides with the Ann Fisher Facebook page.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned at the outset of the interview that there was a time when schools and newsrooms warned against using Wikipedia. My background, 27 years in newspapers, I was warned against it. When do you think – now, and – you know, you're still warned not to take it to the bank, to always check and use it as a starting point. But all things being equal, the tide has turned. I mean, people do look at Wikipedia differently now than they did 6 or 7 years ago. It's given a lot more credence and a lot more credibility. When I just picked 6 or 7 years ago out of the hat, but where do you think the tide turned?
I think it's hard to say. I mean, I think it's part of it has just emerged over time. I don't think there was any particular changing point. I mean, a big part of it is I think we've gained a lot of trust over the years by being the first to warn you about the problems in Wikipedia. you know, it says on the site, you know, the following section doesn't cite any sources or the neutrality of this article is disputed. I mean, we're always trying to tell you if we think there's a problem, if anybody in the community thinks there's a problem, we want to let the reader know right away. But then just over time as well, we've had a lot of really strong initiatives in the community, a lot of discussion about quality, a lot of passion has gone into the idea that we should be as high quality as possible. without being unrealistic about it. And I think if you're unrealistic about it, it's hopeless and daunting, and you just give up worrying about quality. But to say, no, actually, we know we'll never be perfect. We know there's always going to be mistakes in Wikipedia. We know there are mistakes in Britannica. We know that's the nature of doing research work. Doing a good quality reference work is really, really hard. But we should be as good as we possibly can be, and we should take that very seriously. And we should encourage people to think that way about Wikipedia, that, yeah, of course it can have errors, but they really mean well, and they're really trying hard. And don't trust it 100%, but if you find a mistake, let them know the Wikipedians actually do care.
You know, of course, one difference between, I suppose, your typical research document and a Britannica or whatever is that with Wikipedia, sometimes people can have fun with it. You know, there are people who intentionally introduce inaccuracies or things that don't even exist. And I guess I was looking at one. It was Rush Limbaugh recently cited material from Wikipedia. They said they got it from the local newspaper, but that couldn't have been because it wasn't in the local newspaper. And the there was a judge in Florida, I think, that the Rush Limbaugh was talking about on the air. They laughed it off. But that is an episode of there's probably one in a line of cautionary tales.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things that we've done over time and are continuing to do is to look at, take a really serious look at where do these kinds of problems come from and how do we solve them without damaging the spontaneity and really what's wonderful about Wikipedia. So, you know, sometimes people would say, oh, well, you should just shut down all the editing of biographies and only let paid staff do that. Well, no, that isn't going to work. We can't afford the paid staff to generate the high quality that we get. Instead, we should look at, okay, well, who's doing this? Certainly not community members, people within the community. You know, you'd be banned very quickly if you did this. So, and how do we cut out that slice of problems while allowing more people to come in and keeping it open? It's a delicate balance of things that we look at the software and say, okay, what are some of the tools that the community needs in order to spot those things more quickly, in order to monitor what's going on in a more sophisticated way? And that's an ongoing process.
I read that you were planning to launch a system that would prevent new and anonymous users from instantly publishing changes to Wikipedia. Has that occurred, or was that?
Well, so that's an example of that's in trial.
Okay.
We did a first trial and got 65% approval from the community, which is high but not high enough to suit me, so I requested the foundation to make some changes, and we're going to run a new trial very soon. Basically, the idea there, though, is really more about what we do right now is if we have ongoing problems on an entry, we will protect it or semi-protect it, we call it, meaning that new users can't edit it. So if you go to Barack Obama or George W. Bush or something very high profile like that and you're not logged in, you won't see the edit link. You're not allowed to edit because if we allow that, we just know it's steady stream of vandalism. It's just too annoying to deal with. Instead, we protect it, and then we say, okay, well, look, after you've had an account for 4 days, then you would be able to edit. So it's a bit of a waiting period. Well, we don't like that waiting period. It's unfortunate because there are a lot of the people who would contribute anonymously, having never contributed before. A lot of them actually do good work. They're actually happy to contribute. They just saw a spelling error. They just wanted to fix it. They're not malicious. Mm-hmm. So the idea is instead of semi-protecting in many, many cases, what we should be doing is saying, yeah, go ahead, contribute your edit. But if we don't know you, if you're an outsider, if you're new to the community, somebody's going to look at it before it goes live for the public. So that's the idea behind we call it pending changes software. And the first trial, as I said, it was very popular, 65%. Approval rating from the community, but the user interface is a little, I couldn't understand it myself. I actually complained. I'm like, mm-hmm. The buttons aren't labeled correctly. I couldn't quite understand what to do. So it's fun. They've gone back and they've redone it, and the next version is now in testing, and we'll do a formal trial soon. But that's the kind of thing that we look at to say, how do we encourage and allow people who've never been part of the community to get started? You know, somebody of goodwill who wants to come and get started, at the same time protecting the public from the malicious people who pop up from time to time. So it's an ongoing research project.
Are you ever surprised that there's not a lot more monkey shines?
Well, at this point, you know, we've been around for almost 10 years now, so there's very little that I'm surprised about anymore. But in speaking more broadly, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been one of the really uplifting things about Wikipedia generally is to come to understand that, wow, you know, actually most people are nice. Mm-hmm. And most people aren't trying to cause harm. Most people are even actually a lot of the vandalism that we might see, what we call it is sandboxing, meaning somebody is just using Wikipedia as a sandbox. They're testing. They're not trying to be malicious. They just can't quite believe you can really edit anything. So they'll go in and they'll add one little word just to see what happens. And you know, and then they often immediately reverse themselves. Or I've actually gotten some really cute emails. Mostly from younger people, you know, hi, I'm 12. My mom's going to kill me. I'm so sorry I wrote a bad word on Wikipedia. Of course, it's already fixed by then, and we're not going to tell your mom. But it's, you know, most people aren't really malicious or trying to cause harm. And, in fact, most people aren't, you know, one of the things we don't necessarily get from our news media because they reflect politicians who tend to be very, very partisan, is that most ordinary people are not particularly virulently partisan and hate the opponents and so on and so forth. Most people are very middle of the road in their opinions, and they're more interested in getting broad, sensible discussion of an issue, not taking any side in particular, but presenting all the facts rather than trying to have an axe to grind. Obviously, we do get people come with an axe to grind, and that's a social problem we have to deal with. But most people aren't like that. Most people are just, you know, they'll say George W. Bush, yeah, I like him or I don't like him, but I understand Wikipedia can't like or not like him. Wikipedia just needs to report on all the things that are out there.
We have an email from Brian on all that topic, Jimmy. He asks, how do you deal with controversial topics such as abortion, global warming, religion? I'd add to that maybe the Middle East conflicts, that kind
sure.
of stuff.
Well, I mean, I think the big key, I'll just take abortion as a really good example, is to think about so imagine in your mind a very kind, thoughtful, reasonable Catholic priest, and imagine a very kind, thoughtful, and reasonable Planned Parenthood activist. So on the subject of abortion, they're going to have very, very different views. However, the important qualifier that I gave is kind, thoughtful, reasonable. So they can work together. They can come to and say, look, we're never going to agree about abortion, but what we can do is present the issue in such a way that other people can understand what our debate is about. And so you'll understand that Wikipedia cannot say abortion is a sin, and Wikipedia cannot say abortion is a human right. What Wikipedia can say is that the Catholic Church position on abortion is thus and such, and the Pope has given the following reasons, and critics have responded thus and such, so that someone from the outside can come and read it and say, okay, now I understand the landscape, I understand what the different positions are, and in a way that both of those parties who are imagining can point to the work and say, I'm really proud of what we did here. We actually explained this in a way that everyone can agree this is a good explanation of what the debate is about. And now people are prepared, hopefully, if we've done our job well, to make up their own mind on the issue, to come to a thoughtful decision rather than simply responding to emotional appeals and soundbite arguments and things like that. So that's my ideal case of what a controversial topic, how that should go, what that should look like. And it generally works out reasonably well. Obviously, for certain issues, emotions run very high. Not everybody accepts that view of the world. They really want everything to be, you know, one-sided polemic in favor of their own personal position. But most of the people who feel that way become bloggers. And you might think that means I'm trying to be critical of bloggers. I'm absolutely not. I think there is absolutely grand value in society to have people who have a very strong point of view and want to argue in favor of it. That's a wonderful thing to have. It's really important to the overall discourse in society, but it's not what you want in an encyclopedia. The encyclopedia should prepare you to go read those polemics from various sides of an issue with a deeper understanding of the facts so that you can determine, is this polemic persuasive because it's based on a reasonable argument, or does it just sound persuasive because you lied to me about the underlying facts? And I think that's really what it's all about.
I think it was in the New York Times article about the British Museum collaboration. They said that what divides Wikipedia and the museum are the issues of copyright and control. They characterized Wikipedia Foundation as strongly identified with the free culture movement. and holding that copyright laws are too restrictive. And obviously, copyright is a revenue source, something that you can certainly understand. Where does the foundation draw the line on that?
Well, so the important thing is that at Wikipedia, we do respect the law. We do respect copyright. So we're, and that is less actually about copyrights and the law, and more about a moral idea of not being plagiarist.
Okay.
The community, we're really, really proud we wrote it ourselves. That's a really important thing for us. Nobody's ever going to say, yeah, Wikipedia is pretty good, but that's because they nicked it all from Britannica. No, no, we didn't. We wrote it ourselves, and that's important. So that actually avoids for us a lot of the difficult copyright debates. We do think that oftentimes museums in particular and other such cultural institutions have taken an invalid approach to copyright and their rights, and that's changed over time, though. We've actually seen a material change. Certainly, 7 or 8 years ago, what I would expect to hear from a museum is, hey, you have this photo on your site of this painting, and we own the painting, so therefore take down the photo. And I would have to write them patiently and say, the painting's 400 years old. It's in the public domain. You do not own the copyright. You own the physical object. You cannot control digital rights in that way. And they would often back down, but there used to be sort of attitude among museums that their collection is their intellectual property. They have to defend it and not let people really print pictures without getting a license and paying them a fee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think most museums realize, first of all, there's no legal basis for that whatsoever, particularly for older art that's in the public domain as a copyright. And second, it's really sharply in violation with the real ethos and cultural spirit of what a museum should be about, which is to educate the public about culture and to share knowledge. And then finally, they're beginning to realize, hey, as a business model, selling licenses to websites is not a very good business model as, you know, based on things you don't own anyway, is not a very good business model compared to getting the public excited about art, getting the public excited about your collection, because that drives traffic into the museum, sales at the gift shop, memberships, donations. All of that comes about when people say, you know what I really love? I really love the early Dutch masters. That's what I'm into, and I will travel to see it. I will buy books. I will buy movies. I will do whatever I can because I'm really into that. And how did I get into it? Because I read this really great Wikipedia section. I read article after article, and I learned all about it. I think it's really great. So they're much better off creating fans by sharing their work than by trying to lock it up and squeeze a few bucks here and there.
I was surprised that FBI lawyers last summer asked Wikipedia to take down the image of the FBI seal posted with an article. I was really surprised. I thought, I just like, huh?
Yeah, that's what we thought, too.
I think someone else made the point, don't they have something else better to do?
Yeah, I'm kind of guessing there's a couple of bank robbers running around loose somewhere that the FBI ought to be worried about. So, their concern, it sounds plausible at first glance, which is if the FBI seal in high quality is available, people could copy it and create fake IDs or things like
that.
It sounds plausible on the face, but, I mean, come on, like, this is not the way we protect IDs, you know. Have a holographic image on your, you know, make it a nice ID. And second, the FBI logo is all over the Internet. It's all over everywhere. I mean, it's a completely hopeless idea that you're going to have a logo and keep it secret. It makes no sense, you know. So I think that went nowhere. They basically, I think, realized that it was kind of stupid to fight with Wikipedia about that.
Jimmy Wales is speaking at Denison University on Wednesday night at 7:30. It's free and open to the public if you want to go. We'll have a link to that at WOSU.org/allsides if you want more information. Jimmy Wales, co-founder of Wikipedia, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Appreciate it. It's all the time we have for All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.